Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, co-founder and CEO of Employee Cycle, Bruce Marable. And you know us. That's right. You know Employee Cycle. We're your people dashboard company helping to automate your entire HR reporting and analytics process. We know that pulling together all those messy, crappy spreadsheet and Excel HR reports and dashboards is a huge time suck. And you could be spending that time helping your employees navigate through the stress and anxiety that they're dealing with, because 2020 is one hell of a year. So go to employeecycle.com, check out the product, do a free trial, connect your systems, and automate your HR reporting process. That's enough about me and our company, because today we have a very, very special guest. So please help me welcome to the show, Shelly Morales. She is the VP of People Operations at Baupix. And today we're going to discuss how to identify employee burnout during remote work. Shelly, welcome to the podcast.
Woo! Okay. I think you added on a little bit to my title there, People Operations. So I am the VP of People, which is HR and Facilities. So I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for the intro, Bruce. That was great. And what a clapping session you got going on for me.
Wow. People are super excited, and they heard that you were coming to the show, and so they just couldn't hold back their excitement.
That's great. That's great. I'm really excited to be here, and I've enjoyed all of our conversations up to today and looking forward to digging into employee morale. And it is, you know, it's a crazy time for us in this world. And I have said multiple times to many of my colleagues that do this job, wow, to be the head of HR and facilities in this world we call people now in a time of COVID is no joke. That's for sure. So I'm super glad to be here and talk to you and ultimately have an opportunity to share kind of my thoughts on this topic and any others that we might come across today.
Awesome. So Shelly, we want to kick this thing off right. And the best way we know how to do that is to ask you, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Oh my gosh. So I actually fell into this job many, many years ago. So I happened to be one of the unique people who did not go to college. I figured out that I needed a career, and I started that career as a receptionist. And I quickly said, this is kind of boring. What else could I learn? And happened to work at a company that said, you want to try some, you know, it's, we got to do some affirmative action tracking. Would you like to track every resume that comes in? I was like, sure. And then from there, I just kept taking on more and more and more. And over the years, had opportunities from great mentors to teach me things that I didn't know. And then got my SPHR certification and knew, I would say probably, for anybody that happens to take a look at my profile, I've spent many years at a company called Web Methods, and then subsequently 5 years at Juniper Networks, and then on to other companies where I have become the head of HR. And I knew probably in my time at Juniper that I wanted to be head of HR because I saw what good leaders and bad leaders could do to an organization in all those years having been in the function itself. And so, when I made that decision, I made sure it was right time for my family and said, I'm taking on this big gig of head of HR. And now it's evolved to head of HR and facilities, which we call people. So that's how I ended up here.
Awesome. So today we're discussing how to identify employee burnout during remote work. But I think it's important to talk about what is employee burnout and what does it even look like when you're in the office, because it seems like a lot of people do a poor job of identifying it when it's right in front of your face.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think part of that is that people in general, Bruce, don't want to admit that they're struggling. So as much as an HR professional or just anybody in general, a manager might be trying to look for it, people are hiding it because it feels like weakness. So when they say, it's good, I can do it. Yeah, sure. Give me more. What may be happening in the background, which none of us have, you know, it's hard to identify, is maybe they're fighting with their spouse. Maybe the kids aren't doing what they're supposed to. Maybe the refrigerator broke. And then it can be just one little thing that tips somebody to say, oh my God, I can't do this anymore. And so I think the best thing that we can do is to be asking questions of our employees and saying, and that I mean in a very broad term, like you don't have to be a leader to be asking what's going on around you to your colleagues and then say, gosh, I think something's happening, right? So the biggest thing is that people hide issues that they're having. And, you know, you have all kinds of HIPAA rules and laws and things that you're not supposed to ask. And that almost gets in the way, frankly. And so I think the best thing that we all can do is just be good humans and ask people, how are you doing? What's going on? Oh my gosh, what are you doing this weekend? Then you can understand what's happening. And the biggest mistake that I think HR professionals make is they say, I can't ask that. I might be in trouble. Or I don't want to get too close to somebody because I might have to fire them one day. And that's all true. But at the end of the day, if you have to fire somebody who actually you care about and they care about you, it's easier for them. And so I think all those things are important components as you try to suss out what's happening in people's lives to try to avoid burnout. Right. And I think you have to in this world, now that we all are working at home, the entire world basically is working at home, unless you have a manual labor type of job that is in the central functions. It's harder than ever. And what I have noticed, and you and I talked about this a little bit just recently, is there's more tolerance than ever for many, many different things. There's tolerance for disruptions, the kids screaming, the dog barking. And I was joking just before we got on this call, I'm like, what if the dog barks? And you're like, whatever, it's 2020. And that's all true. And I think that in itself is a key driver to avoiding burnout, to making it okay to say, I actually can't take this call right now. I'll be back in, you know, a half an hour. I have to go hold on, please. The water cooler or the water, broken, and I got to let the guy in. And so those kinds of things, I think what happens in people's minds is that they understand that it's not so rigid, that it's okay to say something isn't working. And it's okay to come to me or to anybody on my team to say, I just need a little help. And in that you can make a difference in people's lives. And one thing, you know, there's a couple, I thought a lot about this, you know, this topic before we were getting ready for the call. And I think it's the little things now that make a difference. And it's not we have this big program that's going to, you know, require people to go on vacation or to do things when they actually can't, but it's more like, how are you giving me a moment to think about something other than all these deliverables and all this pressure and whether or not we're going back to school in the fall and what's going to happen to the mindset of my children? So if you step back, and I'll tell you just a great thing that happened literally just last week in our company. So I happen to have a CEO who he's fabulous, frankly. And he's, you know, we're a small company, we're a startup here in Silicon Valley, cybersecurity space, looking to really make a difference from identifying potential risk is the easiest way for me to articulate it. And he sent me a text, you know, late on Thursday last week and said, it's going to be hot tomorrow. I want to send ice cream to everybody. And I was like, oh my God, are you kidding? He's like, no, seriously, do you think we can do it? And I'm like, yeah, we can figure it out. And so, you know, fortunately I had just implemented an HRIS system and could pull people's addresses. And we literally, with the help of people around us, primarily his, you know, just people who had the opportunity to do it, who could access the personal data, sent 4 packages of Ben and Jerry's to everybody in the US for delivery on Friday. Unexpectedly just rocked up at their house. And because it was a little too late for our India colleagues, we sent them a surprise gift on Monday. And I can't tell you. And then we said, of course, take pictures. So we have some really fun pictures, but people are like, wow, that's so, and that was all him. I was the executor of making it happen or helping him make it happen, but 99% of it he did. And I'm just like, what a great, like that is the kind of thing that people then respect and go, I still had to work really hard. And the nice little note said, you know, we've turned up the heat on delivery of products. And by the way, it's going to be, you know, in the high 90s in a lot of places of the country. So here's a little snack for you. And I think those types of little things don't cost a lot of money. They might cost a little bit of time, but they make a difference for people and they help with morale and burnout and all that stuff.
Wow. That was really comprehensive. And you covered a lot of things there. One of the first things I want to dig into was when you initially started talking, you mentioned how employees don't feel that they can be vulnerable and that they can share the things that they're doing because who knows, there's 1,000 different reasons, but ultimately the biggest reason is probably because they don't want to seem like they can't hold their weight or take the pressure or operate or execute during chaos or whatever your culture or whatever a company's culture expects employees to do. But I'm curious, do you think the employer is typically driving such high demand or setting such a high level or barrier for the employees that that's driving burnout? Do you think that at most organizations, employees are doing it to themselves because they always want to one-up somebody else? People are always looking for promotions or praises or accolades. Or do you think it's a vicious cycle where both sides are pushing each other and so burnout happens because even though you might want to take a step back as an employee and say, you know what, this seems like an impossible task because you don't want to ever seem like you can't do the work, you'll try to do it anyway and burn yourself out. And then because the company is used to people working at that rate, then that just becomes the norm. And then it's this vicious cycle. What do you think about that?
I do think it's a combination. And I think it's a combination for a couple of reasons. I think everybody is personally driven by different things and different activities and responsibilities sometimes excites people. And sometimes it's like, no, thank you. I don't really want to do that. And I think every person, I tell people this all the time when I mentor them, you have to love what you do every day. And if you don't, you should get another job. Because life is too short. And so from an employee's perspective, I do think, you know, people do set expectations, sometimes unrealistic expectations for themselves. I tell people all the time on my team in particular, I'm like, yes, of course you can do that, but you can also let somebody else do it. And so because they're like, I want to show up really well. I want to do what you want. And I think you as the leader, rather you are an actual leader of people inside a company or you are a team member, it's our jobs, again, as good humans to look out for people and to say, it's okay, let me have that for you and to watch what they're doing. So I think some things are self-imposed. And I think sometimes people feel trapped. They're like, I have to have this job. I have to make this amount of money. I'm worried now, especially if I either quit or get fired, I can't get another job. So I think that causes the self-imposed pressure. But on the flip side, companies have to deliver, or companies are no longer companies. And so you do have, it's a balance, and I say balance very lightly, of the push to be successful. And at the same time, not pushing too hard that then you have tons of attrition where then you can't deliver anyway. And so it is always, it's hard for CEOs and executives in any of these companies, big or small, because you are driven by wanting to be successful. And there are many things that you will do that will get in the way of that success. I think the best thing that executive teams can do is to really step back and look at where can we lean in harder? Where can we set expectations? And where can we do these little, either sometimes they're big things, depending on what size of a company you are and how successful and profitable you are and how much you can make a difference. And sometimes there are little things like sending ice cream to people's houses. And so the pressure is on both sides. And everybody should make no mistake. There is not an executive team in this company, in this country or world that isn't, unless they're privately owned, like family businesses where the executive team's the husband and wife, they're in charge of their destiny. But every executive team in most scenarios answer to somebody. And so in that answering to somebody, they're trying to make a better product, deliver it sooner, deliver it better, all those things. And that takes people. And that's why I've always said, and I appreciate CEOs that think like this, that no company is successful without the people that are going to come every day. And there are the hard drivers, overachievers, all of those people. Those are the ones you really have to look out for in burnout, because they push so hard, they don't know how to switch it off. And so I think, like, to answer your question, I do think it's both. It's company driven, rightfully so sometimes, and sometimes they push, leaders push a little too hard, and it's employee driven.
So now let's transition this to the work from home environment. You have people working from home. And what's interesting is that not only are we dealing with people working from home, but obviously there's a lot of national challenges that we're dealing with. So I'm going to ask this question on two sides. For the companies that already had a work from home policy where you could work remotely 100% of the time, but then also the people who are now forced to work from home due to COVID and safety and health reasons, what are the differences between trying to identify employee burnout? Because one is that people love to work from home. This is what they chose to do. And so that might be even more difficult because you don't have anything triggering you asking them, are they okay, like COVID? But on the other hand, we have employees that are forced to work from home like everyone else is today.
So I think that, so I'll tell you about us in particular. We were really, and so I've been at Balbex now since March. So I started in the most crazy time ever. I accepted on a Tuesday, started on a Wednesday. We sent everybody home on Thursday. And so I literally myself have only been in the office 2 days, and I hadn't met hardly anybody yet. So as a new leader of this function in this company, what I had to do is make sure that I could connect with people. And that would have happened for me, whether I was in the work office environment or whether I was over Zoom. And so it's an intentional thinking about reaching out, talking to people, finding out how they're doing, checking in with them, whether it was an always work from home or a always in the office place. I think the challenges that we are faced with now is sometimes it's technology challenges and things just don't work because there's just too many people on the network. And like you said, it's the added things of even those people who worked from home always that happen to have school age kids, like grade school kids, those kids used to go to school. Now they're at home and the summer camps are closed. So they too are faced with challenges that they've never faced before. So what we're doing on our side is and there's so much information. It is information overload on what to do when you're staying at home and this and that. And, oh, we're worried about what the governors are going to say. We're worried about what the president is going to say, what's happening and what's not happening. And I think the biggest thing that we can do as a community is to say, yep, it's a challenge. Let's try to solve it together, because every company is going to be a little bit different. I think what I have found personally is the just the random reach out to people to say, I just want to check in. And if you're in my situation where I have myself and two HR generalists in the US and one person in India, and then we've got recruiting to do, and we're actually hiring, which is an amazing thing. We are looking for people so the good side of this for us is it's broadened our talent pool, where we only could recruit in Delhi and in San Jose for the most part, other than sales roles. We can recruit almost anywhere now. So that's awesome. And I'm looking for people that want to connect with others on Zoom. I'm like, let's talk about why this is good instead of why it's so bad and hard, and how can I help you? And reaching out to people that I can. If I had a larger team, if I was in a community where I was, like, for instance, at Cadence Designs, I would be saying to my HR business partner team, make sure you have your finger on the pulse of these employees, offering coaching and guidance to the managers so that they too are not taking for granted what's going on at home, that they too are being, you know, tolerant. Because sometimes, you know, people come up, grow up in different cultures, and you don't have, you know, you see it when you're in the workplace, you see people behave differently than they do when they're online. And so you have to watch for those things.
So my last question, to make this as actionable as possible, For anyone that's listening to you and totally agrees with everything that you're saying, whether it's trying to check in randomly to see how people are doing, over communicate, and doing everything you possibly can to check for burnout, what are some of the things that you would want them to remember? If they don't remember anything else from this interview, what are the three things that you would want people to make sure they're doing so that they can identify and hopefully stop some of the burnout that's inevitably going to happen with their workforce?
I think it's it's the connection piece that is really, really important. And that's the connection sometimes with you directly. Sometimes it's through your managers. Sometimes it's, if you're in a really senior leadership role, it's through your CEO. And help them with what that voice is. Coach them from the back to say, are you thinking about this? Maybe we should send out this message. I've drafted a message that I think we should send to our employees, but it should come from you. Those types of things, because remember, they're very busy. And they, while it's on their mind, some of them have employee first mentalities and some have it's a good thing they have a job. And the best thing we can do in these environments is, even when you have a CEO who says it, they're lucky they have a job, which I'm really fortunate I don't have that CEO. I think as an HR professional, you have more than ever the ability to impact people's lives by coaching that CEO, coaching those executives, coaching your managers to make those connections. I think I would also make sure it's on your goals and objectives. Like, thinking about burnout is an important piece. For years, we've said, let's measure engagement. Let's run a big survey. Let's do all these things. That data is worthless unless you do something with it. That's why people don't like to do surveys. So I personally like, if you can get a survey with a tool like a Waggle, I don't know if anybody's ever heard of that before. It's like, it does crowdsourcing. So you can ask a question, a 1 to 2 question survey, get so much information from it, and it crowdsources the answers. So that's a really good tool to use to find out what people could do. Like, I would ask a question. Are you feeling burnt out in your work environment? And then the second follow-up is, regardless of your answer, what is the one thing we can do to make a difference? The tool then crowdsources it for you and tells you that these are the three things we should focus on. Those types of tools are super conducive to making a difference, I would say. And I think I only gave you two, but you think that's good, or you want me to think of one more?
Oh, no, that was awesome. That was awesome. That was great. Shelley, thank you so much for being such a great, awesome, and thoughtful podcast guest. You really took us to the next level in regards to understanding how to identify and hopefully keep employees from burning out. So thank you so much.
Woo! I love the sound effects, Bruce. And thank you so much for having me today. And I look forward to having future conversations and would welcome invites on LinkedIn from anybody who wants to just chat separately offline.
Awesome. And where can people find you and Bulbix online?
Well, they can find me on LinkedIn, of course, and Bulbix is at bulbix.com. And we're here in the Silicon Valley, but around the world, obviously. So cool things are happening, and would love to have people join us because we got some great open roles.
Awesome. We'll post your LinkedIn and also a link to your careers page as well.
Perfect.
See if there's any bites to help you join the team, if you want to join an awesome team.
That's great. And the one thing I would say is, I also, let me just add before we close, diversity in my hiring is super important to me, Bruce. So anybody who has any great ideas for me or wants to join me in this journey of making sure that my workforce is the best workforce and that it's diverse and really speaks to different populations around the world, I welcome it.
That's awesome. We appreciate any HR leader that's trying to diversify their workforce, because it's really going to take HR to do it and to make it happen and to be intentional about it. So we really appreciate that. So for everyone listening, if you enjoyed this episode, which I know you did, then leave us a 5-star rating, because it shows that we're providing great content and that we'll keep doing it. So please, and I just like to hear people say kind things about me in the show. It makes me happy. It makes me smile. Also, if this is the first time you've ever listened to an Employee Cycle podcast and you came here because you're already a super fan of Shelly and you just had to hear what she had to say, or you thought this topic was compelling, but now you're looking for more awesome episodes, then please subscribe to the Employee Cycle podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you listen to awesome episodes. And last but not least, all of you HR and people leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.